This episode of And Then They Were Gone is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians, these are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
Disappearing is something all boys do at the age of 16. That's what police told Valerie Nettles when she discovered her 16-year-old son, Damien, hadn't come home the night before. The teenager had been at a party with friends on November 2, 1996, but missed his midnight curfew and couldn't be found the next day. The Nettles family was frantic, but police treated Damien as a runaway. This early misstep, one that we see so often in missing persons cases, meant that potential witnesses were missed, evidence was lost, and now, nearly 30 years on, no concrete answers have ever come in Damien's disappearance. The Nettles family, however, hasn't given up, and they're hopeful that someone out there is still willing to do the right thing. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Damien Nettles. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone.
You came from a far off place, looking for a friendly face. I love your reckless inhibition and the music that you gave me. Oh, we never really much liked school. We grew our hair and broke the rules. We got high on the playing field and crashed my mother's car.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Now, you may have noticed something a little different this week. We've temporarily replaced our theme music with a song that's very near and dear to this case. It's called Someone Knows, A Song for Damien. It was written and recorded by Alex Roberts, one of Damien's close friends. And I'll talk a little bit more about it at the end of the episode. Ethan's also looking at me confused because I put all of the music in during post, so he has no idea what I'm talking about right now.
Yep, I was like, where are we going? What's different?
Yeah.
Seems the same to me.
Yeah, so I thought it was cool. Like I said, I will talk about it a little bit more, but I just listened to it and I had the idea of just using it in this episode, just again, to make it more about Damien, and because it's a really lovely song. So I don't know, something a little special this week. What makes this case so disturbing to me is how someone can go missing from such a small, isolated place. Damien Nettles was last seen just after midnight in the town square of an island that's 147 square miles.
An island?
Yeah.
I assume we're going to get into this, but like what island?
Yes, we're going to get into that. So the ferries had stopped running by the time he went missing, but he somehow managed to vanish and has remained undiscovered for almost 30 years. But before we get into it, we've had some new people join us over on Patreon, so we'd like to take a moment to give some shout outs. Thank you to Ashanti C, Allie S, Chastity W, Nathalie E, Allison N., and Jenna D. We really appreciate your support.
Thank you all so much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to get our episodes ad-free and sometimes early, you can join us over on Patreon at any level, starting at just $2 a month. You'll also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So yes, let's get into it and let's talk about what island this was. Damien Richard Nettles was born on June 21st, 1980 in Singapore to Valerie and Ed Nettles, but he grew up in Cowes, England. Cowes is a town on the Isle of Wight. Now, I've heard of the Isle of Wight before, but I didn't really know anything about it, so I looked it up. Turns out it's actually a vacation destination off of England's south coast near Hampshire. It gets more sun than the rest of England, apparently, and has some pretty great beaches, which England is generally not known for having the best beaches.
Isn't there some music festival associated with that also?
I think so, but I don't remember off the top of my
head. I feel like that would be the only reason why I would know it.
Yeah. Damien was the second of four children, with an older sister, Sarah, a younger brother, James, and a younger sister, Melissa. According to reports, Damien and his siblings had a good life in Cowes. The Nettles family was a loving one, and the six of them were close-knit. In November 1996, Damien was 16 years old, and like most teenagers at the time, he was into Nirvana and loved wearing Doc Marten boots. Damien's family describes him as kind and funny. On the family's website, damiennettles.uk, his mother writes about him as a music kid. He loved playing in garage bands with his friend Alex Roberts, who wrote the song I was talking about. And the two of them started a band when Damien was 11 called Distorted Justice.
That's actually a really good name for a band.
I know. Like when he was 11, too. So Damien sang and Alex was on guitar.
Nice.
Damien was known as a gentle giant. At 16, he was already 6'4".
Jesus.
I know, we think our teenagers are like gigantic and that it's so much taller than they are.
Yeah. Oh my God, 6'4 at 16?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And skinny too. He was like 180 pounds. So his mother said that he was all arms and legs and, yeah, you know,
and nothing in between.
Nothing in between. And he was just a typical positive teenage kid. People liked him, and, you know, while he was a good guy, like, he wasn't perfect. Valerie said that Damien liked to try to get his hands on the odd bottle of cider. In fact, that's basically what he was doing when he was out on November 2nd.
But it's, I mean, cider meaning...
Like hard cider. Hard,
yeah, but at 16...
He wasn't, and, like, apple picking.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that clarification.
Okay, good. You seemed confused.
But at 16, isn't that the legal age?
18.
It's 18 in England?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I don't know why I thought it was 16. Maybe that's some other European countries.
Okay, we did have to pause and look up the drinking laws because you did make me remember that when I was in Scotland in high school, 16-year-olds could get into clubs. So we did look it up, and 18 is the legal drinking age, but in England, you can drink with a parent present at like a pub or whatever, beer or wine, not liquor, but you can't buy it yourself. So you have to be accompanied by a parent and you can have
16.
It at 16.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, so I guess, you know, that was something that his parents like knew about and, you know, were fine with or whatever. But, you know, this night he was out with friends, right? So he was back to just being underage.
Gotcha.
So that night, Damien attended a house party with his friend, Chris Boone. Damien left home just after 7 p.m. on November 2nd, 1996. His father drove him to Chris's house in West Cowes, and then Damien and Chris took the floating bridge over to East Cowes to a party at a girl's house. Valerie initially gave him a 10 p.m. curfew, but Damien persuaded her to push it back to midnight. She remembers feeling like she didn't have to worry because they lived on a small island where everyone knew everyone. She said that her son was also the type who would call if he was in trouble or needed to be picked up. And she said, she's written about this too, and she's like, you know, he was 6'4", like he was 16. She's like, I can't just, you know, wrap him up in cotton his entire life. Like he had to, you know, get out there and be able to
live.
Live, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, obviously she has dealt with a lot of feelings of guilt about that, but she's right. You know, I completely understand where she was coming from, especially when you're in such a small place that does feel safe. And, you know, you trust your kid and they have a good head on their shoulders.
And your kid's a giant.
Yeah. In 2016, the BBC did an 8-part investigative documentary into Damien's disappearance. It's called Unsolved: The Boy Who Disappeared. In it, Chris describes his night with Damien. They started out at this house party, but decided to leave and go try to get some drinks on their own. One thing that I love to come across when I'm working on these stories, because, like, obviously these stories are so sad. They're, you know, horrible and tragic, but I really like it when I come across, like, little anecdotes that kind of humanize the people. It's just, I don't know, it's just nice. And unfortunately, we don't always get a lot of those. But in this one, Chris says that because Damien was so tall, he was on drink buying duty. And so I love the idea that, you know, he was 16 and was just going into shops like, I am tall and therefore obviously an adult.
I must be 18.
Please give me some cider.
Yeah.
But Damien's tall boy plan worked and they got ciders.
I mean, look, he only had to look 2 years older.
Exactly. It's not like here where he had to pass for 21.
Yeah.
I think 16 to 18, especially when you're 6'4", isn't that hard.
Yeah.
So according to Chris, they bought special red cider. Now, he didn't specify what kind, but I wanted to look this up because a lot of what happened this night kind of involved, you know, was Damien drunk? Like, what was going on with him, you know? So and alcohol of all kinds, but, you know, ciders particularly can really vary in the alcohol content.
Right.
Now, I don't know exactly which type of the special red cider they got, but there is at least one version of special red that had an 8.4 ABV, which is pretty strong in general, and especially strong, I think, for a 16-year-old kid.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost like drinking wine.
Yeah.
I mean, wine is usually around 11.
Yeah, or 12, like 12 yeah. to 14, I think. But so it's more. But I mean, again, these are like bigger bottles, too. Right. So it's, yeah, I mean, that's pretty strong. Chris and Damien boarded the ferry from East to West Cowes and went into the town center. According to Chris, Damien thought that his older sister, Sarah, was going to be in a pub down there. Sarah herself has said in an interview that the last time she saw her brother was the weekend before when he came to visit her at university. When he left, she told him that she'd be back to visit the next weekend.
Oh, okay.
So it sounds like that's kind of why he was thinking that she might be there. Because remember, nobody really had cell phones at this point.
Right.
So, you know, he couldn't just text her, give her a call and see where she was. He just kind of had to, like, wander around and guess.
The good old days.
Yep. So Chris and Damien started poking their heads into pubs trying to find Sarah. They're also trying to use Damien's height to get them in, though, of course, they are underage. Now, Damien usually didn't have any trouble getting inside the pub, but Chris would always get thrown out immediately because he was, like, very obviously underage.
Yeah.
The two teenagers also didn't really have any money on them. So I think part of the reason they were looking for Sarah was to see if she could, like, buy them some pints or something, or, you know, just something along those lines.
Yeah.
By 10:30, they were unsuccessful and it had begun to rain. Chris was cold and over it because, remember, this is also November. So, like, this is not great weather that they're doing this all in. So he and Damien agreed that it was time to call it a night. The pair walked together to the park where they split up for the respective walks home. Chris says that he saw Damien walk up the steps to the park and was sure that he would have continued on that way. Unfortunately, he later learned that Damien didn't. Instead, Damien turned around and headed back toward town. The rest of the timeline we have of that night is from witnesses and CCTV footage.
Yeah, I was just going to ask how we know.
Yep. At 11:15, a witness sees someone who is possibly Damien pulling on the car doors of a blue Ford Fiesta at Harbor Lights Pub. Then, at 11:34, he entered Yorkie's, a fish and chip shop. The pulling the car doors, we're not sure if that was Damien or just somebody who looked like him. we do know that it was Damien who entered Yorkies. So when he arrived, a group of six men were there, and they were later identified as Army soldiers. And when I say later, I mean years later. Like, the police didn't even try to identify them at first. Like, that's just, we'll get more into that. But I mean, it just shows how little they appear to be doing.
Yeah.
Now, CCTV footage from the shop shows Damien saying a few words to the guys, but the audio is pretty bad, so it's really hard to hear what was being said. But based on just watching it, it seems like the type of chit-chat that happens when you're waiting in line at a chip shop at 11:30 at night. After spending several minutes there, the group clears out and it's Damien's turn to order. But by the time he gets up to the till, like, he's acting a little odd. He gets to the counter and he says, "One, please." But he doesn't say what he wants.
Yeah.
So the person behind the counter says, "One?" And Damien repeats himself, "One, please." He then says something that's inaudible and the guy says that he can't hear him. Damien says he wants one while counting out change in his hand. The person behind the counter is a little over it and just says, "Do you want chips?" To which Damien says yes.
So, like, one piece of fish and chips?
Or one order of chips, I think. He only got chips.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All
right. Yeah.
And apparently Damien, like, couldn't even, like, pay. So, like, the guy, like, took the money out of his hand and gave him his chips.
All right. So, I mean, we're thinking he's drunk at this point.
Yeah. So, well, that's the interesting thing, because the man who waited on Damien that night was Dennis Welsh, who owned Yorkies. He spoke to Unsolved about his experience with Damien that night. He said that after Damien left, he was speaking with two other workers, Rob and Sharon. They were talking about how out of it Damien seemed and how they believed that it wasn't just because he was drunk. Like, listen, I mean, they're a chip shop that's open downtown at midnight. Like, they yeah. see their fair share of drunk people.
I'm sure.
To them, it looked more like he was on drugs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But no evidence of that. Like,
nothing concrete, no. And you know, even in 2016, when Chris was asked about it, he's like, "We weren't doing drugs that night." So, like, I don't.
That night.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know. But yeah,
I know. They were,
like,
kids.
But yeah, but he's like, "We weren't doing drugs that night." Like, I don't know why that would have been. You know, like, he was kind of confused by it, too.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Well, I mean, I guess he could have done something after I left him. Like, I don't know." So, yeah, it was a little odd.
But, like, if it was after Chris had left and Damien was just on his way home, then you got to think it was happenstance. He ran into somebody that he knew was holding, but, like, Damien didn't have any money.
Right. And, I mean, obviously he had a little bit of money, right, because he paid for the chips. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like he had that kind of money on him.
Right.
Even, like, you know, back in the 90s, like, I don't know how much things cost, but I mean, I feel like you could get something for like $10.
Yeah.
But I don't think he even had that.
Hmm.
Damien left the chip shop and was allegedly seen at 11:59 p.m. by a man who's waiting to pick up a child from the bus. He described Damien as, quote, "a miserable figure huddled eating chips," end quote.
Okay. So much to unpack. This guy was waiting to pick up a child from a bus at midnight?
Yeah, so it said in the article, I didn't really get into it, but he was like a foster carer, and he was like picking up a foster child from the bus.
Okay.
So I don't know, when they say child, I mean, I don't know if that means like a child or like a teenager or what.
Okay.
But yes.
Got it. And then he was a miserable figure.
Huddled eating chips. Yeah, the way it was described is, like, Damien was sitting down, like, on the street, I think back up against a building, like, with his knees up to his chest, like, eating chips.
Like a raccoon,
okay. Yeah. He said that Damien got up and was carrying a camera with him. Now, I have seen reports about a camera, but it's unclear to me exactly where this camera came from, if it's something he brought from home and took to the house party. Or if it's something that he got at the party and took with him out of it.
Does Chris mention the camera at all in this interview?
Mm-mm. I've only read about it in different articles, so I'm not really sure. But obviously the camera has also never been recovered.
Mm.
So the man said that Damien or the person he thinks was Damien, walked by him and was walking unsteadily. He then said, quote, "They are watching us," and then continued to walk down High Street. Now, while we can't be positive that this was Damien, Damien was caught once more on CCTV at 12:06 a.m. on High Street. So, like, this
guy's—it's all matching.
Yeah, the sighting matches up, right?
Yeah.
So that sighting is believed to have been Damien. But that sighting at 12:06 a.m. of him just walking is the last recorded sighting of the teenager. So what happened to Damien? The walk between the chip shop and his house should have only taken him about 15 minutes, but he never made it. There are two routes that Damien could have taken that would have allowed him to avoid the cameras, either along the coast or through the park. Remember, it was a cold and rainy November night, and the wind coming off the sea would have made it even more unpleasant, so Valerie doesn't think that her son would have chosen that route.
But didn't he come from the park originally?
Yeah.
So that, wouldn't he have to backtrack and then potentially would have been seen on CCTV footage?
Well, no. So I think once he got to the park, he would have been off CCTV footage. So I think the idea is that the CCTV caught him on High Street and that if he had taken the park route or the sea route, it makes sense that he would have been kind of lost on camera after that.
Okay.
But the park route makes more sense because that's the way he was going home
right.
when he and Chris were walking together. So again, because of the weather and, you know, the fact that he wasn't planning on going the sea route, it does make a little bit more sense that he would have chosen the park. But whichever route he took, he never made it home. It was actually Damien's younger sister, Melissa, who realized that he wasn't home the next morning. Now, at first, Valerie assumed that her son had stayed over at Chris's house or with another friend. But when they called Chris, he told them that he and Damien had parted ways and walked home the night before. The family tried contacting other friends, but no one had seen Damien. Finally, at around 3 p.m., when the Nettles still hadn't found him or heard from him, they went to the police to report him missing. And, of course, you can guess how that went. I even mentioned it in the intro. Damien's mother says that she was told that he'd be home by tea time and that his disappearance was something all boys do at the age of 16.
Like, the balls on that dude to say that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I get it. Hindsight's 20/20, but like, come on. Like, you're just going to completely blow this mother off and just be like, oh, he'll be home for tea.
Boys will be boys.
Boys just disappear.
Yeah.
Like, no boys disappear.
Like, that's not,
it's not a thing.
It isn't. That is not something that all 16-year-old boys do at all.
Most don't.
Right. But police were reluctant to treat Damien as anything other than a runaway at first, despite the fact that he was on an island. And the Nettles insisted that that wasn't who Damien was. Like, he wasn't the type of dude who would just take off. But unfortunately, they didn't make much headway, and as you can understand, the family has argued for decades that the early hours of the investigation were mishandled because of this. It's so frustrating because, you know, police take this stance so often as, oh, they'll come home soon, they're probably just off, you know, fucking around or whatever.
Right.
And okay, yeah, most people do come home soon, but also, when something actually happens, the first hours are the most important. So you're just giving those away.
Right. And we've said this before. It's good to know that this doesn't just happen in America.
Right. It's right? a universal experience, as it turns out.
But we've said this before, where like, I know there's the whole thought process of, oh, the police don't want to waste resources and time or whatever if the kid's just going to come home. But, like, who cares? Waste those resources.
Yeah.
Like, what difference does that make? It's pulling resources away from what? Because at this point, you're not necessarily involving detectives.
Right.
So, at this point, it's just the uniform guys, like the street cops. that are investigating initially, what harm is that doing?
Yeah.
Just waste those resources for the first couple of hours. Get as much information as you can. And like, who cares if he comes home?
Yeah, but that's unfortunately not what happens. No official searches were done for Damien, nor did the police perform door-to-door canvassing. That all had to be undertaken by family and friends. The police weren't even the ones who found the chip shop video.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, they didn't even bother with that?
No, they didn't even bother to go ask the businesses for CCTV. It was literally family and friends who went around downtown and like went to all of the businesses and say, hey, do you have video from this night?
I have a question. Do we know what the ferry schedule was?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that it's by midnight, it was done.
Okay. That's, yeah. So there's, you know, no possibility of him like leaving the island is
correct.
Is where
yeah.
I'm
and
going.
That's why the whole like runaway theory is so annoying.
Because where would he run to?
Yeah. I mean, somewhere on the island. So, I mean, maybe that was part of the police's thought is like, well, he's got to be around here somewhere. But we will talk about that a little bit more, actually.
All right.
So while the police weren't the ones who found the chip shop video, they were the ones who ended up losing the last video, the one that showed Damien walking at 12:06.
They lost it?
They lost it. So the family was able to view it several years after Damien went missing. So, and Valerie talks about this in the documentary.
Several years?
Yeah, it was a whole thing. So like a lot of this stuff didn't come up for years. Like it was ridiculous. And I think that at one point, like this last video, I think maybe the police did get it and that's why the family hadn't seen it. I don't know. But the story that Valerie tells is that she like went to the police station to view it. They viewed it. And apparently, like the cop just left it in the VCR and never got it. And then it was recorded over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about mishandling evidence. Holy shit.
So now nobody can go back to see if there's anything else or anyone else on that video that might give a clue. Because there are definitely theories about what happened to Damien that night. As I mentioned, the first theory from police was that Damien had decided to run away. Now, this could have been somewhat plausible, given that on Sunday, when Damien was reported missing, the last known sighting of him was at 10:30 p.m. when he and Chris parted ways. So theoretically, he could have boarded a ferry and left the island.
Right.
However, once it came out that Damien was seen on High Street after midnight, him leaving the island that night became significantly less likely as the ferries were closed. So that doesn't mean he was stuck there, right? I mean, because there were private boats.
Sure.
That he could have gotten on to leave. But like in terms of him just up and deciding to get on the ferry and go, like that wasn't a possibility. Another early plausible theory was that Damien had fallen into the water and drowned.
Very likely.
Well, exactly. I mean,
much more so, I think, than him stealing a boat because and, you know, running away
or meeting somebody who gave him a ride on a boat, you know.
Right. But you would think that if it was a stolen boat, they would have gotten a report of a stolen boat, the police. Or if somebody had like given him a ride last minute or unplanned, there just happened to be somebody like tending to their boat on the docks.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, can you take me over to the mainland or whatever, like that person probably would have come forward at some point.
Yeah. So
that doesn't seem very likely.
It doesn't. But we, as we know, I mean, here in the States, there are so, so many cases of people, especially young men, teenagers, early 20s, getting drunk, walking, falling in water and drowning.
Especially if he decided to go the sea route versus the park route.
Exactly. However, experts have said that his body would have washed up in a matter of days or weeks, but it didn't. Now, I mean, this got to the point where Damien's father went to the harbor master and they chart those waters. So they know exactly what that water does. Like they know, you know, tides, of course, and everything, right? And the harbor master is like, no, absolutely not. Like, the time of day, the time of year, the time of everything, if he had fallen in that water, yes, it was cold, so it might have taken a few extra days, but he would have washed up. Like, every expert in the area has said that there's no way he could have just fallen into the water. Most of us are trying to get healthier, but we're guessing about which habits actually matter for our bodies, and we're all different. So what if you can measure how your body is aging and know exactly what to focus on next? Listen, I need instructions, and that's what True Diagnostic does. They test your biological age and key health markers, and then they give you a clear 90-day plan based on what your body needs without the guesswork. The test is so easy to take at home. They send you the kit, you take a little finger prick, send it in, and then you get this amazingly detailed report back that tells you everything you need to know. I'm so excited to get my next round of results to see if I've improved or what's changed in general since the last time I took it. I'm really interested in the True Health test, which tests over 105 biomarkers, including vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fatty acids, to understand my system's health right now. True Diagnostic is trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. And right now, my listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using code ATTWG20 at checkout. That's truediagnostic.com and use code ATTWG20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. I've already told you that I'm a big fan of Quince because these days I'm trying to rein in my spending a little bit and focus on quality over quantity, especially in my closet. And that's why I love Quince. The fabrics feel elevated and the pricing actually makes sense. Quince makes high-quality wardrobe staples using premium fabrics like 100% European linen, 100% silk, organic cotton, and they work directly with safe, ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're not paying for the brand markup. My favorite pair of jeans in the world is from Quince. Buying jeans is always so tough, but I got these. They fit beautifully the second I put them on, and I love them. Right now, go to quince.com/ATTWG for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to wear it and love it, and you will. Now available in Canada, too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/ATTWG for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ATTWG. Did you eat? That's usually the first thing Ethan says to me when he gets home because, honestly, some days I just can't even deal with it, so I don't. Luckily, Factor makes healthy eating easy with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs, so you can eat well without the planning or the cooking. Their meals include lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole food ingredients, and healthy fats. And you can choose meals that fit your individual goals, whether that's healthier eating, calorie management, or more protein. They also have 100 rotating weekly meals to keep things fresh and delicious through the winter. Factor meals are always fresh, never frozen, and ready in about 2 minutes. Ethan's been loving them too. He works a crazy schedule, so it's so much easier to just take these Factor meals instead of worrying about meal prepping on the weekend, which is the last thing anyone wants to do. So if you want to try it, you can head to factormeals.com/ATTWG50off and use code ATTWG50off to get 50% off and free breakfast for a year. Eat like a pro this month with Factor. New subscribers only, varies by plan, one free breakfast item per box for 1 year while subscription is active. Water
and then disappeared.
Like, that's just not how that particular body of water would behave.
Right. And that water is too cold for like sharks.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. And so he obviously never showed up in the water. I mean, because again, that could have been a possibility for the first couple weeks, right? The first couple days, first couple weeks. But once that time period passed, the chances became basically zero. So if we rule out runaway and if we rule out accidents, what are we left with?
Foul play.
Exactly. However, it was years before police would even entertain the idea that something could have happened to Damien besides those two things.
I mean, even if it was one of those two things, did they do any investigation behind it?
It doesn't sound like they did much, no. Because again, everything I'm reading sounds like it was driven by the family. So if we're talking about foul play, especially when it involves someone who's as well liked as Damien and who's just a teenager who doesn't have like known enemies in the world or people after him or business deals that went wrong or a wife who's, you know, mad at him. And like, you know, he's not a guy who has a lot of potential to even have enemies. So we have to ask why. Like, why would he have been a victim of foul play? And if we ask why, to me, the big possibility that comes to mind is drugs.
Yeah.
Damien's longtime girlfriend, Abby, was with him until the summer of 1996. She told the BBC that toward the end of their relationship, Damien began to change. Quote, "I saw flickers of someone else. He was hanging around with a different group of people who are a little bit older than him. There were obviously some things he was keeping to himself. It could have been drugs. I don't know." End quote.
Not a smoking gun there.
No, but importantly, Gemma, who was Damien's new girlfriend, said that police never questioned her about any of this. She told the BBC, quote, "At no stage did they ask me questions about Damien taking drugs or Damien getting into trouble or talking about something bad happening to Damien," end quote.
I mean, did the police do anything?
It truly doesn't sound like they did much at all in the first days, weeks, months. It wasn't until 6 years later, in 2002, that the case was handed over to Hampshire Constabulary's Major Crime Department.
6 years.
6 years.
Okay. Like, I can understand the locals, like, dragging their feet for the first couple of weeks. But when it's apparent that he's not coming home.
Yeah, then
like,
what?
You gotta either turn it over to somebody that knows what they're doing or do more.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. 6 years? What is this new investigator going to do? Look at a bunch of haphazard notes and evidence that's been destroyed?
Yeah, like, there weren't even any... When I say there weren't searches for Damien, I don't mean like just in the first couple of days when they thought he was a runaway. I mean, there weren't searches, period. So Alex, his friend who wrote the song, talks in the documentary about how he and some other friends would literally walk through town, go to like derelict buildings, call Damien's name and like try to find them themselves as teenagers because the cops weren't doing anything.
Yeah, which is dangerous in and of itself.
Well, exactly, obviously. But like they're like somebody has to do something. So when the case was handed over, there was finally a little bit of movement and some names. An informant went to the police to say that he believed Damien had not only been killed that night in 1996, but he knew who did it. A man named Nicky McNamara, who was a local drug dealer at the time. Now, we don't know what, if anything, police actually did with that information. But to my knowledge, they didn't pass that tip on to the family. So if police did investigate a connection to Nicky McNamara in 2002, the family was not aware of this.
Okay. Not unusual.
Yeah. So that doesn't mean that the police didn't do anything, but it would be another 8 years until the informant, who believed that his information hadn't been acted on, went directly to the Nettles family with what he knew. According to him, Damien and McNamara had gotten into an argument over cannabis. Nicky didn't intend to kill Damien, but the argument turned physical and Nicky punched the teenager. Damien fell and hit his head or something along those lines and died accidentally.
And I assume this informant was there for all of this? Is that how?
Yes.
Okay.
He said that Damien's body was then hidden in a drug den in Cowes where it stayed for several weeks. It was then buried near a cycle path in a sail bag. Now, this is incredibly specific information.
Yeah.
So Valerie thought it was worth acting on. She took it to the police, and a new senior investigator who had been appointed to the case actually listened to her. It was only then that we saw the first arrests. A Sky News report from May 2011 states that five men were arrested on suspicion of murder, and it quotes the senior investigating officer saying police remained determined and that the body had not been located or identified. All of the men arrested were involved with the drug trade in the 90s with Nicky McNamara, but none of the five men was Nicky McNamara.
I think it's important to note here, and we covered this in a recent case, but over in the UK and elsewhere, people can get arrested for questioning purposes.
Yes.
So unlike here in the States, where if you've gotten arrested, chances are they have enough evidence, you know, already
to take you to trial.
Right. This is an investigatory arrest.
Correct. And that's what this was. Now, Nicky McNamara wasn't a part of this arrest because he was dead. He died of what was ruled an overdose in 2002. The informant only came forward after Nicky's death. Now, you can look at that and say that he was too afraid to come forward while Nicky was still alive, but you could also look at it as he came forward with a bullshit story after Nicky wasn't around to defend himself.
That's true.
Searches were also conducted around the cycle path from Cowes to Newport, but nothing was found. The five people arrested were eventually released without charges. Three more were also arrested, but also with no results.
So maybe it was a bullshit story.
Then in October 2012, ITV reported that police announced a £20,000 reward. Superintendent Dave Powell said that the biggest challenge in Damien's case was separating fact from fiction and that, quote, murder or foul play cannot be ruled out, end quote.
Maybe they could have separated that a little bit better, like 14 years prior.
16
at this point. Yeah. Well, right, because you said it was like
2012 when he came out and said this.
Yeah.
In April 2013, ITV published a police statement update saying that the reward led to 30 reports of information, but none produced new lines of inquiry. They said that they would conduct a fresh review and that the case would not be closed. They said that up to that point, 1,127 people were involved. They had 357 witness statements and 2,536 documents were reviewed and processed.
Minus the one that they lost.
Yeah. In 2016, Damien's case became the focus of Unsolved, The Boy Who Disappeared, that eight-part series that I mentioned earlier. It investigated the tips that had come in about Damien's disappearance and the many rumors. In Cowes, the story had become folklore, with people confidently asserting things that just didn't hold up. So I do want to say, I think that in 2012, when the officer made that statement about the biggest problem being separating fact from fiction, is by that time, that was absolutely true. I mean, it had become like a boogeyman kind of tale. And even Valerie has said that. She says that she thinks a lot of people had been kind of using Damien's story
to like scare their kids to come home.
Well, and just that bad guys were using it to appear tough. They're like, you know, hey, don't fuck with me or else, you know, we'll do you like we did Damien, like that kind of a thing. But that a lot of the people saying this didn't have anything to do with anything. So the reporters interviewed Nicky's partner, who was still alive. It's a woman named Shirley, and she was with him when he died. And she was with him, you know, in 1996 when all of this went down. But she
so wait, a reporter is interviewing her, not the police.
Yeah, so this is the BBC. I know, but she had been interviewed by police many times.
All right.
And that
I just wanted to.
I know.
It's like par for the course for this case, if that's true.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that was the thing. Like, she initially didn't want to speak to reporters for, you know, a variety of reasons, I'm sure. But one of which is she's like, oh my God, I've been asked about this so many times. I don't know anything. You know, police keep on asking me. I don't know anything about this kid. Over the years, plenty of other rumors about what happened to Damien have come up. Some said that he was lured onto a yacht where he was forced into a labor trafficking operation. Others have said that he was taken by local pedophiles. In fact, in 2002, a convicted pedophile told authorities that he had been involved in a murder on the Isle of Wight in the mid-90s. And, you know, it's not like the Isle of Wight has a lot of murders and definitely not a lot of unsolved murders, so this made police think Damien. And it led police to search a field, but nothing was found. Police later established that this guy had just been making up stories.
Also, typically pedophiles don't go after or target kids that are 6'4".
Right. And that's exactly what I was about to say. It's like, I don't know, you know, but it doesn't make sense for me that a 6'4" guy who was sometimes able to buy drinks would be a
target
likely
for a pedophile. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Around 2007, the family hired a private investigator, Ivor Evans. He knocked on doors and interviewed as many people who were around who are still alive and willing to talk. And when he did this, one name kept coming up. Nicky McNamara. Even though all the roads that led to him ultimately came up empty, the connection wouldn't die. One man said that he had seen Nicky pin a teenage boy up against a wall on Bars Hill in Cowes around the time Damien disappeared. He even said that another man, Daniel Spencer, had also witnessed the altercation. However, Spencer denied seeing anything like this. Though Nicky McNamara died in 2002, Bunny Isles, his best friend and business partner, was still alive when the BBC was making their documentary. He agreed to sit down with reporters and Valerie to talk about what he knew.
Business partner? In
air quotes. The drugs. Yeah.
And his name is Bunny?
Bunny. Yeah, that's his nickname. Back in 1996, Bunny and the rest of the crew dealt drugs in a lot of the pubs on High Street. There were also houses around town that they dealt out of. One such apartment was above a butcher shop. Now, at one point, the family had been told that on the night he disappeared, Damien had been shouting up at the flat from the street.
Told by who?
Just an informant, just like a random, like a witness. They didn't, you know, say who. Now, by the time Bunny had the sit down with Valerie and the reporters, he had been arrested in Damien's disappearance. He was one of the ones who I mentioned earlier. His house had also been searched, as it was believed that it could have been where Damien was killed or perhaps where his body had been hidden before burial. However, despite the suspicion, Bunny denied knowing anything about Damien's disappearance and said that Nicky hadn't been involved either. Now, I'm not sure if I necessarily believe him, of course, but one thing he said did ring true to me. One of the rumors that have been going around for years is that Damien was killed over a drug debt. Bunny said that that idea was ridiculous because they would have never given a 16-year-old enough product that he would ever owe a drug debt.
Okay, that's like the most valid thing in this entire case.
Yes, that was my thought too when I was watching that on the documentary. It's like, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's a 16-year-old kid. Why would you go into debt?
Yeah. Like, why would you let him? Like, that seems absurd to me.
It would be different if it was like, oh, yeah, this guy's loaded.
Yeah.
Like, we know he has money or he's got a nice car that I want or something like that. And yeah, we'll let you, you know, fall into debt and then we'll come and collect it with, you know, by taking your car or whatever. But what are you going to get out of a 16-year-old kid? You're going to go to his parents and be like, hey, your boy owes me money for drugs.
Right.
Like, that's a dead end.
Exactly. So like that made complete sense to me. I was like, okay, I believe it. But then he said something that I was like, okay. Because he said, he's like, well, we wouldn't even mess with a kid like that anyway. Like, meaning like they wouldn't even be selling drugs to a teenager, which I'm like,
well,
whoa, okay.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll sell drugs to whoever's going to fucking pay.
But... Exactly. So while I do agree with Bunny that Damien being killed over a drug debt is unlikely, I still feel as though the original informant's story could have happened. If Damien was shouting up at that flat, he could have pissed someone off, which could have led to a physical altercation. If Nicky had actually been pinning Damien up against that wall, the altercation could have led to violence. Could his body have been kept in a drug house for 3 weeks without anyone else saying anything? That I don't know. But I do believe some version of that story could have happened, and it makes a lot more sense than the other theories that have been tossed around for the last 30 years. In January 2026, Detective Superintendent Nick Plummer of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary spoke to The Independent. He said, quote, "Our shared objective with the Nettles family remains finding out what happened to Damien. We understand the concerns raised by members of the Nettles family about the standards of our initial investigation. A complaint was received in 2016 where two elements raised were upheld following an investigation. A detailed apology was subsequently provided to Damien's family. It's important to stress that this is still an open case and any new credible information will be explored for any viable lines of inquiry," end quote.
A lot of good that written apology is going to do them.
Yeah. What are they supposed to do? Bury that in a grave where they don't have their son's body? Because it doesn't solve the case. It doesn't really do much of anything at all. But it does confirm on the record that at least some early issues were serious enough to warrant formal acknowledgement. And we do know that one of the two issues that he was alluding to was the losing the tape. But it's all cold comfort to the Nettles family as they stare down the barrel of 30 years without Damien this November. The tragedy is that after 30 years, there's very little we can say about Damien's disappearance with any certainty. We know that Damien was out in Cowes on November 2nd, 1996. CCTV places him at Yorkie's around 11:35 p.m. and then on the High Street at 12:06 a.m., walking alone and eating chips. After that, the trail stops. Over the years, police have taken hundreds of witness statements, reviewed thousands of documents, arrested suspects, offered a reward, and repeatedly stated that the case remains open and that murder or foul play cannot be ruled out. In January 2026, Damien's mother, who is now in her 70s, described how the absence never resolves into grief you can finish because there's no conclusion. She described still thinking about him every day, still wanting a place to bring him home to, and still wanting an answer before she dies. This case is almost 30 years old now, and the mystery is still the same as it was in the first day. What happened after the last CCTV frame? Before we finish up for this week, I want to share a few things with you. The Nettles family website, DamienNettles.uk, is still up and running. On it, you can find a link to a blog that Valerie began keeping in 2012. I highly recommend that everyone listening to this episode reads it. It gives a unique insight into the mind of the parent of a long-term missing person, the hopes, the fears, and the regrets. I also want to read an excerpt from one of her entries because it's a message that seems to be very important to Valerie. Quote, "If there's any lesson to be learned from this case, it has to be this. Listen, be vigilant, listen to your inner voice, and trust your instincts. Teach your children safety measures for when they are out on their own and to trust their instincts. If something does not feel right, then it is probably not, so listen to that inner voice. Stay away from drugs and alcohol, as this makes you vulnerable. If you see something that does not look right, be the one to make the call and report what you are seeing or hearing. Be involved. Watch out for each other." End quote. I also highly recommend the BBC docuseries. I relied heavily on it for information and putting this episode together. Once again, it's called Unsolved: The Boy Who Disappeared, and it's available on YouTube. At the end of episode one, Alex Roberts, Damien's friend who wrote the song you heard parts of, makes an appearance. Once I saw him on the documentary and I went to the family's website and learned that he'd written a song for Damien, I was inspired to reach out. He kindly agreed to let us use the song in this episode as long as we had Valerie's blessing to do the episode in the first place. I reached out to her and she was kind enough to say yes and asked that we make a donation to the Missing People charity, which can be found at missingpeople.org.uk. She said that they've, quote, been a support to families like mine and support to those who have, for whatever reason, gone missing and need a friendly voice with practical advice, end quote. We've made a donation and linked the charity in the show notes so you can learn more about them and make a donation if you're able. I've also linked Alex's website so you can learn more about him and his music. We're also going to play the entire song at the end of the episode, so I highly encourage you to stick around and listen. It's a beautiful song written about a boy who was taken before he had the chance to become the man he was meant to be.
We played in a rock and roll band, terrorized our folk with the sound of a teenage ride on the ground and reveled in our time. I know kids can be very cruel. I know you took some shit at school. You were no harm to anyone. A gentle soul who played the fool.
Damien Nettles has been missing from Cowes on the Isle of Wight since Saturday, November 2nd, 1996. He is a white male with brown hair and brown eyes. He was approximately 6'4" and 180 pounds at the time of his disappearance, and was last seen wearing blue jeans and a black fleece. Damien was 16 when he went missing. He would be 45 today. If you have any information about Damien Nettles or his whereabouts, you can contact Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary by calling 101 and asking for the Major Investigations Team. Just mention Operation Ridgewood. You can provide information anonymously through Crime Stoppers at 0800-555-111. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. This week's theme music is Someone Knows, A Song for Damien by Alex Roberts. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
In a moment you are gone.
search for hope, low and high. Left our disbelief out in the night. In a week I aged 10 years, and I betrayed you with my tears. You're missing less than you are missed. Not missing, but still to be found. There is a hole in everyone. See your face on the street in a dream, in newspapers and magazines. Oh, now and then I'm in them too. We always said we made the news. Change the world, it is a stage, but you are on a different page. I dream you walking through the door, just like you never left at all. Your friends and loved ones embrace you. A dream I like to hold on to. You're missing less than you are missed. Not missing, but still to be found.